If it was Kershaw tipping pitches, CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
The World Series is here, and we, of course, are going to do what we do best. That's hardcore baseball analysis. Alex, are you ready to talk about the platoons? Are you ready to talk about how the Dodgers' right-handed hitters are going to match up against Chris Sale? Are you ready to talk about the Boston Red Sox bullpen?
I have pages and pages of notes on Clayton Kershaw's postseason curse, all the splits for the Dodgers lineup, every possible matchup. We are just going to go down this rabbit hole. We're going to go for it, man.
It's hashtag analytics time, man. We're pivoting into analytics. Just kidding. We're going to read a bad column written by homeboy Bill Welt for the State Journal Register. I don't know what state that's for, or journal, or what register. I don't really even care. Headline, Bill Welt, most popular, quote, fake stat of them all, exit velocity. Alex, are you ready? We're going to get right into it. It's the next installation of our bad take reading. And we're going to read this whole one because, as you pointed out to me before the pod, it's just like eight sentences. It's not even a column.
No.
All right, let's do this. Fellow writer Trevor Lawrence famously coined, quote, fake stats a while back. I think I know the biggest one of all, exit velocity in baseball. All right, where's your head at, Alex? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm ready, man. First of all, I'm thinking who Trevor Lawrence is. That's really where my mind first goes. Am I supposed to know who that is?
Famous. He's famous. He's very famous in the journalism world. You wouldn't know. Hashtag hardcore journalism.
This was just like a friend of his and they were chatting and this guy was like, oh yeah, Woba, fake stat. And our guy, Bill Welt, was like, oh my God.
Moving forward. Networks will show a replay of a home run and emphasize how fast the ball went out of the ballpark. For example, a home run traveled up to 115 miles per hour over the fence. What does that mean? What does that mean, Alex?
This is like slam poetry, I'm pretty sure.
Wait, did I read it wrong? Okay, sorry. For example, a home run traveled up to 115 miles per hour over the fence. What does that mean? What do you mean? What does that mean? What is he confused about?
You just answered your own question right there.
Does he not know what miles per hour are? Does he not know what a fence is? Does he not know a ball? What part of that sentence doesn't he know? I'm so curious.
I am too.
He says, I don't know because I can already... This is great. I'm sorry. I came out of character for a sec there. He says, I don't know because I can already discern that the dang ball was crushed. This is what God. I do know. It doesn't matter and nobody cares.
I just appreciate the sincerity behind it. Like, this is not a meticulous takedown of exit velocity. He's just like, shut up. I don't give a shit. And that is the entire column. And I gotta respect, he's just sticking to his guns.
His logic for this is it doesn't matter and nobody cares. Did he conduct a poll? Did he ask everyone if they care? It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. The specificity there is what makes this column very fantastic.
That's my new Twitter bio.
It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. My tweets, they don't matter and nobody cares. I love the part where he's like, I don't know because I can already discern that the dang ball was crushed. Can you? Can you really tell that the dang ball was crushed? I mean, it's on TV. It's kind of hard to tell whether it's just like a well-hit ball or like a Giancarlo Stanton 120-mile-an-hour screamer. Like, you can kind of tell, but you don't really know. If you're watching TV, you don't know and they took the pitch speed away. You wouldn't know the difference between 98 and 93, but it would be very different to the batter.
Every fly ball off the bat on TV looks like a home run. Like, and then it ends up being a short fly out to center field. I'm like George Springer hits a ball in the air, and I'm like, oh my God. And then you know, Jock Peterson hustles in and catches it near second base. I'm like, oh, I guess it wasn't near crushed.
Second base. That's an inaccurate representation of you when a ball gets hit that you think is going to be a home run. Because literally every time I've ever been with you watching baseball and you think it's going to be a home run, you'll be like, get out, ball. Get out, ball. Even if it's like a ground ball up the middle. Get out, ball.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, let's close this thing out. I like to see how fast a pitcher can throw the ball. That's something that matters and a regular viewer like myself can appreciate. Otherwise, stop throwing numbers at me that don't matter. It's getting out of hand. Just stop.
I'm having trouble holding it together over here.
Bill Weld, my guy. How is it different? I'm actually kind of curious at this part. This is the only part that piqued my interest. What's different about how fast a pitcher can throw versus how fast you hit? That's like pretty determinative. Yeah. Like exit velocity is pretty determinative of whether you're going to be a good hitter.
But like, I feel like this column is just the perfect distillation of all the conversations that we have, all the bad takes that we roast. And a lot of people try to have, you know, like I was saying, like these very well thought out takedowns of a stat, or like why we don't need this and why this new stat is destroying the game or something like that. And Bill is just plugging his ears and closing his eyes and saying, la, 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 la. I don't care. I don't want to hear.
He's literally doing that. He's plugging his ears, closing his eyes like a fifth grader and just yelling, just stop. Just stop. Yeah. Just stop. Just stop. Yeah. Just stop. Yeah. He's like,
stop throwing numbers at me that don't matter. I don't care.
It's getting out of hand. That's the kind of thing that you say if you're 40 and washed. XYZ is getting out of hand. Because what does that even mean? You can't refute that. I can't refute that. Maybe it is getting out of hand. Whose hand? Yeah. What is it? I don't know. Oh, Bill. Thank you, Bill. We appreciate it. We'll link to that in the bio. I'm Bobby Wagner.
I'm Alex Baisley.
And this is Tipping Pitches World Series Edition.
Yeah, I am ready. I am stoked, man.
Maybe the most on-brand thing that I'm going to do in this podcast is before we even talk about the World Series, I'm going to yell about how the Mets still don't have a GM. What the hell's going on, Alex?
You tell me, man.
So they've narrowed it down, according to SNY, to Kim Ang, Kaim Bloom? I'm very sorry if I'm pronouncing that name wrong. Doug Melvin, Brody Van Wagenen. Jesus, his name's Alex. They're killing me. The Mets are doing this on purpose. And Casey Close. So we're not going to do hardcore analysis of what each of those people would do as Mets GM. More importantly, the thing that I'm most concerned about as a Mets fan is that we're 1 week away from the baseball season being done, and a real GM would have to be using this time to like put together their staff, put together their analytics department. Like, the Mets only have 4 full-time analytics employees. I would hope that the next GM wants to have more than 4 full-time analytics employees. And the next GM doesn't even exist yet. Yeah. It's just another chapter in the book of Mets and Wilpon incompetence. And yeah. Count me as concerned.
I mean, so they're not the only team in this scenario, right? But they're the only one that's going about it in such a bizarre way. I mean, first of all, so Brody Van Wagenen.
Brody V-Dub.
V-Dub. He's a player agent. He's like Noah Syndergaard's agent and Jacob deGrom's agent and our shining sun Tim Tebow's agent. And they're going to hire him to...
Wait, hold on. Rewind. Wait, what? He's the agent for Syndergaard, deGrom, and Tim Tebow?
Yep. And
so that's like that's the three-headed monster of the future for the Mets.
Yes, exactly. No, this guy's like a big shot baseball agent, but they're going to hire him to run a baseball team? What?
It's a little like the Lakers signing Kobe Bryant's longtime agent to be their GM, Rob Pelinka, which is still kind of wild to me, but he's doing a weird job. I truly don't know enough about any of these people to give a shit right now, but I do know enough about how long it takes to be good at a GM job to know that they should be hiring someone.
Yeah. I think it's funny if you look at the Mets versus like the Giants right now, who also fired their GM about a month ago or so. And the way the Mets have been going about it is we don't want someone who's very analytically driven. They have publicly said this for whatever reason in 2018. They're like, we hate stats as a franchise, which weird flex, but okay. And it's all very public. And then this Chronicle headline is about the Giants is Giants GM search focusing on analytical candidates. And also there are no names out there. So like they're just doing their stuff in private. They're like, we want someone who's like going to push the envelope and move things forward. And like the Wilpons are just yelling names out in their sleep.
That part is true. Also, they're just in like Kim Ang, who would be the only woman GM. She like works for the league. It's like they're just throwing out names of people in MLB, like agents, all these different places from within the organization, outside of the organization. Like, it's just being handled poorly. And I mean, maybe there's something to be said about being in New York and like a lot more people digging into who you're looking to hire than in San Francisco. But
it feels like there was an internal email in the league, like about some random topic, and whatever, one of the Wilpons jumped on and just hit reply all and was like, does anyone want to run our team, BTW?
God damn it. I fucking hate this. I'm wearing a Mets shirt right now. This is rough stuff. If there's one thing to be said, it's that, I mean, you got to think about it. Analytics don't actually matter in baseball. The Red Sox definitely never looked into analytics. The Final Four teams, the Red Sox, Astros, for sure no. They don't care about analytics at all. Dodgers, they don't even have an analytics department as far as I'm concerned. And the Brewers, Craig Counsell, most traditional manager I've ever seen.
I think Jeff Wilpon was actually the ghostwriter for that bad take reading we had on the intro segment.
Probably was. Speaking of Craig Counsell, Alex, he made a move that just utterly wrecked the baseball world, apparently. Yeah,
that was a capital M move.
Game 5. Craig Counsell started Wade Miley, left-handed pitcher, Wade Miley, who, not very good, was having a good year and a good playoff so far, but he's not great. And after one batter pulled him, if you haven't heard all of this, I invite you to go read about it, I guess, or I guess we can explain it a little more. He basically just started a left-handed pitcher to try to get Dave Roberts to start a lot of right-handed hitters in his platoon, because the Dodgers are so good and so deep that they have a right-handed hitting lineup and a left-handed hitting lineup. It just hurts my soul. As someone who recently looked at the Mets' 2016 NL wildcard game lineup and it had like fucking James Loney in it, really hurts me to see the Dodgers have all of these good players. So he did that, and he pulled Wade Miley after one batter and brought in Brandon Woodruff, who's right-handed and can pitch in long relief. It's not actually a non-traditional move. It's been done before. It was done in like the 1920s. There's a lot of precedent for this, which we're not going to take all this time to explain. But the collective baseball world lost their shit. Can you tell me why?
Not really, because it was kind of a smart move. Like, Wade Miley was never supposed to start this game anyway. He was just going to start the next game. So this was a bullpen session for him. And like the Brewers themselves pulled this earlier in September in a game against like the Cardinals. So if the Dodgers had done their advanced scouting, they would know that like this thing is on the docket. But like, I don't know. Whatever. They did it. It was like essentially a one-time thing, right? The Brewers weren't doing this the entire playoffs. And I mean, a good part of like baseball Twitter was like, wow, this is weird. Who knows if it works? Okay, we're moving on. And then there were like a few actual baseball writers who were like, well, maybe MLB should look into a rule change so that this thing shouldn't be allowed. And it's like, what? The Brewers did one thing that is within the rules, and now you want to change the rules to make it so they can't do that? Like, I'm so confused by this.
Is there like another sport comparison to this? Not really, right? Because there's no other sport where the way that it struck me was like, if all of a sudden at the end of a playoff game that the Warriors started making offense defense substitutions, like they subbed out Steph when they were on defense and put in someone who's a better defender, and then they brought him back in on offense, which is something that happens all of the time in every game, regular season or postseason, and nobody cares. And this happens in baseball one time and everyone's like, I don't know. I'm with you in that it's a smart move. And it's well within the rules, and I don't see how it's any different than bringing in a lefty one out guy in inning like four.
Yeah.
Which is apparently within the purview of everyone who's freaking out, but this, because they did it in the opposite order, matters? Really?
Yeah. I don't know, man. It feels like it's one of those things that, like, you know, it goes against the spirit of the game. But like,
does it even though? Does it?
No, it doesn't. And it didn't make a difference. The Dodgers won anyway. So stop whining about it.
What, I mean, like, what spirit are we talking about there? Which part of the spirit of the game, of this like fake concocted thing that we talk about, does it go against? Because I'm in theory, if I'm Craig Counsell, I'm allowed to bring in a left-handed reliever to face a left-handed batter, right? Yeah. That's all that was then.
Yeah.
Wade Miley just happened to not get the guy out because he's Bunts, but...
Yeah. I genuinely don't know.
And finally, before we move on to talking about the most scandalous cheating scandal in the history of scandals from the Houston Astros and Manny Machado and his heel turn, before we get to all that, I need to talk to you about Chris Sale planting a weird story in the media about a belly button ring infection and that being the reason that he was in the hospital.
Ugh, yes. Give this to me.
I don't even know what to give. But he's just a weird one-off comment that everyone kind of ran with as very serious. So yeah. Chris Sale, Boston Red Sox ace, noted weird guy. He pitched in game one of the ALCS and he didn't pitch very well. And then apparently was hospitalized afterwards with, I don't know, some kind of infection or something like that, some kind of stomach flu or whatever. And he had lost like a lot of weight, it was reported, because he'd been throwing up or something like that. And he's apparently better now. He's starting game one of the World Series on Tuesday. But he was asked by reporters yesterday or Friday or whenever it was why he was hospitalized. What kind of sickness did he have? And his explanation was that he'd been taking a belly button ring in and out too many times. And my question is, how do you even know that that's a thing that you can do to be infected? It's never crossed my mind. Has it crossed yours?
I mean, no. I feel like I generally knew that that was a thing because it's essentially an open wound. So if you keep opening it, I suppose there could be an issue. Perhaps, I mean, Chris Sale's from Florida. Maybe he has friends with belly button rings and he knows about this sort of thing.
I think,
so,
does he have a belly button ring, do you think?
No, he doesn't.
Do you know for sure?
So actually, our boy Bob Nightingale, had a little anecdote. This actually doesn't confirm or deny whether or not he has a belly button ring, but he confided to several teammates that he was going to tell his tale and see if he could fool the media into buying it. One Red Sox player said, he told me he was going to say that, but I didn't believe him.
Yeah, I saw that quote. Why? What? What perverse joy does Chris Sale get out of doing that?
I don't know.
Trick the media, man. It's all fucking fake news anyway.
I mean, what, like, who cares at the end of the day? Like, it's kind of funny and everyone laughed.
I support it.
And I think everyone knew it was just kind of like some sort of stomach bug and it's fine and he's not on his deathbed or anything like that. So you might as well pull the media's leg a little bit.
Yeah. Well, good luck to Chris Sale getting that belly button ring in and out throughout the World Series. I hope we can see him 2 to 3 times.
God, I know, right? This is the 2018 version of the bloody sock is like the bloody navel area of the jersey.
You said the bloody sock, and I'm not going to go on a 10-minute rant or anything, but the bloody sock is fake. I don't care what anyone tells me ever. The bloody sock is 100% fake.
Okay. I'm probably with you on this.
It's Curt Schilling, dude. You got to take everything he does with a grain of salt. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some drummed up conspiracy theory about the Astros stealing signs from every team in the league. I'm trying to drink away the part of the day that I cannot sleep away.
All right, so as we have noted, we are now in the World Series. The Red Sox advanced past the historically good Houston Astros. but not before the Astros threw everything at the wall to see if it would stick, including spying on the Red Sox using a guy named Kyle and an iPhone to steal some sort of signs or something else from them. We're not really sure what happened, but during game one, the Red Sox noticed a guy by like their credentialed like photo box with just holding an iPhone and I guess filming the pitcher or whoever, and they kicked him out and they were like, hey, you're not supposed to be here, and connected some sort of dots and realized that he was with the Astros and lodged a formal complaint with Major League Baseball. And yeah, a lot of people were not too happy about this, including a lot of other teams who apparently had the same thing happen to them. And so apparently the Astros have been cheating the entire season. No one really knows what's going on, but they're not going to get in trouble for it because, you know, MLB didn't want to sully the postseason or anything like that. So they're getting off scot-free. But Bobby, what the hell, man? What happened?
Yeah, what the hell is right. First of all, is there a more perfect name than Kyle for the guy standing there? Wasn't he wearing like sunglasses and like a polo and like,
yeah, something like that?
That's out of a cartoon. Jeff Lunau, good president of baseball operations, bad fake Russian spy from an 80s movie. Like, I don't know how you be more obvious than putting fucking Kyle, just Kyle, just Kyle. It's Kyle. He's just going to go, we're just going to send Kyle down there with a fucking iPhone.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff Lunau, the Astros are like some of the first people to really use TrackMan data, edgertronic cameras for pitchers, all these different like cutting edge technologies, and their move to steal signs, which is an illegal thing, was not to use like some high quality camera that was untraceable from like the 100th row in the nosebleeds. No. We can't do that. Absolutely not. What we have to do is we need to send Kyle and a polo and a hat and sunglasses with an iPhone 8. Great camera, by the way. Great marketing for Apple. Send his iPhone 8 down there, or iPhone 10 or whatever the hell, and is violating MLB's rules. I don't get it. I don't get why. I've never understood the sign stealing thing. I understand it from like a one game perspective, but doing it as like a full on like campaign and like violating these rules like this is a weird move. But then again, my take on this is that like I truly could not care less. If you get your signs stolen, I'm fully in the camp of if you get your signs stolen, it's on you.
Yeah.
Just change your signs. It's not hard.
We also don't know what he was doing. Like
he was playing Candy Crush.
Like sign stealing was floated by like Dave Dombrowski, the Red Sox GM, but it could have been something else. Like, I heard someone on Twitter suggest that maybe he was looking for tells of Red Sox pitchers for when they were like tipping their pitches or something like that.
Yes.
Shout out to top rated podcast Tipping Pitches.
It's a big moment for us this postseason. Luis Severino.
It's been so big.
Craig Kimbrell. Our fucking Google hits are going up, Doc.
I know. It's incredible. My favorite thing is Jeff Lunau's excuse, which is that we had someone down there spying on the other team to make sure that they weren't spying on us. His excuse is that sometimes we send people down there to make sure the other teams aren't cheating. Which, like, yeah, for sure, dude. That's what you're doing. You're just
the
making sure everyone's doing legal things. I know.
That worked. I don't. Yeah. Good for you, Jeff Lunau.
I mean, of course, the Astros are cheating. You remember earlier this year? I guess this was earlier this year. Yeah, beginning of the year. When like the, or was it, no, was it last postseason? When the Red Sox had the Apple Watch? You remember that?
Yeah, that was last year.
Like every team fucking cheats. Every team looks for a way to gain an edge on the other team.
I have no concept of years anymore.
But like every team looks for a way to gain an edge. Like just be better at gaining an edge.
Agreed. Tipping Pitches is pro Spygate. Pro Deflategate. We're big Patriots fans. We love Bill Belichick.
Wait, I just read this today, and this is kind of interesting that you were talking about like how the Astros have been ahead of all like the cutting edge technology and stuff. And then apparently there are rumors that their like fudging their data for some of their minor leaguers, like TrackMan, spin rate, and that sort of thing. So like they'll bump up a pitcher's numbers when they're selling them to another team and being like, hey, you want this guy? His fastball's got a 2400 spin rate or whatever. Yeah. And then teams get them and they're like, no, he doesn't.
What the hell? Oh, that's really interesting, actually. That's like a longer conversation because I've read a lot and listened to a lot of interviews about how weird it is that players come to the Astros and suddenly they can like the Astros find ways to like add spin rate to guys.
Yeah, like their strikeout usually rates something are insane.
Well, like their strikeout rates for sure, but a lot of that I think has to do with pitch selection and pitch sequencing and pitch tunneling and all these different things that like they actually are ahead of all the other teams on. Like Gerrit Cole came, started throwing more curveballs, started striking more guys out. That wasn't fucking rocket science or anything, but the like spin rate is a really hard thing to control. It's really hard for someone to learn how to increase their spin rate. It's not really like throwing, it's not throwing harder. It's not even necessarily throwing with more break. I mean, it can affect break and it can help with break, but it's just like, it has a lot more to do with like arm angle and like the ball position in your hand and just like the natural way your body
pressure
moves
on the ball and the right.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a very hard thing to teach. It's an easier thing to scout for and to project if you see a guy who has a high spin rate but is getting hit for some reason. And Driveline does a lot of this research and stuff, but like people have always found it weird that like the Astros have cracked the code on how to increase guys' spin rates. Maybe this was right in front of our faces all along. Maybe they didn't crack the code. Maybe they're just making the numbers up.
So what we're saying here on Untipping Pitches, Trevor Bauer, innocent. He was right all along.
So true.
He had them nailed. Wow. My boy has been slandered.
He's been looking for the truth all along. He's just a truth seeker, dude.
He is a truth seeker. And he was silenced for it.
Honestly, it's because we live in a fascist country.
Yeah, seriously.
It doesn't support conservative viewpoints. Anyway. the Astros are cheaters. And Manny Machado is the dirtiest player in baseball. According to Christian Yelich. What is good with my man, Manny?
What is going on, man?
So if you haven't seen, then you just don't watch baseball. But Manny Machado, he's had a couple questionable moments throughout the postseason and really throughout his career. Like, this is who he's been all along. He's not fooling anyone. Manny is who we thought Manny was. But he had a takeout slide at second base of Orlando Arcia early in the Brewers series, and then in game 6, I want to say, he kicked Brewers first baseman Jesus Aguilar in the heel or like in the ankle as he was running out a ground ball when Aguilar was just kind of like hanging around the base. And it was pretty egregious. Like, you could see him slow down. You could see him really just like tee up Aguilar's foot. Pretty hard to get around that one. It's a tough play to defend. And then in game 7, Machado had, I guess, like a base hit, like an RBI base hit. He scored the game-winning run in game 5. And then game 7, he, as he was making his walk back to first, just kind of just grabbed his nuts at the Brewers fans, which was an incredible flex. And we support it. But Alex, can you tell me, what does this mean for Manny's perception? Does this mean anything for his free agency? That's a dumb question that I've seen some people who have been answering that I'm going to ask you. And how does this make us as a podcast feel about Machado?
I've come full circle and I love him again. it because of how he embraced it by the end of the series. So he had 2 takeout slides, and the second one was arguably way more egregious than the first. Like, he had already passed the base and then just reached up and grabbed Orlando Arcia's leg as he was throwing to first. And it was pretty bad. And so at that point, and this is at around the same time, he had the play where like he didn't run out a ground ball. He wasn't hustling. And Dave Roberts had a very serious conversation about it. And then Machado was asked about it, and he was like, yeah, man, that's just not me. And people were like, who the hell is this guy? Who does he think he is? And then he stepped on Aguilar's leg, and then he taunted the entire Brewers stadium when they went back to Milwaukee. And frankly, it's just incredible. He has totally embraced the villain of the 2018 playoffs. And I kind of love it. And Yasiel Puig has been there the entire time egging him on. And watching the two of them just rile each other up and in turn rile up Brewers fans and the rest of baseball fandom has been truly a sight to watch.
Yeah, I think something that's particularly satisfying has been seeing Machado do this and Puig with the home run in game 7. That was like the cushion that they really needed.
Yeah. They crotch chopped to each other.
Seeing those two absolutely expose Milwaukee fans, the same Milwaukee fans who, I'm going to keep saying it on this podcast, who cheered Josh Hader and gave him a standing ovation after his racist tweets. Just seeing them eat shit over it was just endlessly satisfying.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable to see. I think that a lot of the conversation about this has been drawn up in such a black and white proportion, just in terms of like there have been columns talking about how Manny Machado really needs to like show some sort of maturity and he really needs to step up, especially after swiping Aguilar's ankle, which like was clearly on purpose. And it's like, it's not a great look for my guy. I got to admit it. But like, he also, baseball is a game that has encouraged like hard-nosed, go out and do what you can to win play for a century. And now the culture is maybe finally starting to change a little bit. And just because Manny Machado doesn't follow every letter of the law, it's like, well, he's immature. He needs to grow up. It's going to affect his free agency. Teams are going to be put off by this. And it's like, no, if he's on your team, you love this. This is exactly what you want to see. He's going out there and he's just trying to win, man. He's leaving it all in the field.
Also, this is not immature. Can we just like use more words in the English language? This is not what immaturity is.
No.
I don't understand. Like, immature is just the game of baseball. It's a child's game. What are we talking about here? We're not like solving world issues here. We're playing fucking baseball. We're running around in tight pants. Like, is maturity suddenly like the end all be all? Like, was every superstar ever mature? Ken Griffey Jr. is like the best left-handed hitter I've been alive for. And his nickname was the kid because he played the game with, you know, joy and fun and heart. And he wore his hat backwards and all that stuff. Was he immature? I don't like.
Was Curt Schilling mature? Was Nolan Ryan mature? Give me a break.
Was Pedro Martinez, the greatest right-handed pitcher ever, mature? He had moments where he would just egg on the Yankees fans at Yankee Stadium, and he would come out and talk about who's your daddy afterward. Is that a mature thing to do?
Yeah.
We need to use more words. We need to use more words.
Yeah, it's like, it's not immature, right? Like, maybe it's not what I would do in my workplace. Like, show up to work at 9 a.m. and be like, I'm your daddy, everyone. You know, like, I probably wouldn't do that. But when you're playing a child's game for a living, you can. It's okay. We can let that one slide.
I'm trying to think of a better word to describe it than immature, but we don't often frame it in those terms. So I like, nothing is coming to me. He's just a little over the line sometimes. And that's not maturity. I don't think you unlearn that stuff. Because like, that's the way that we framed the conversation with Puig too. When he first came up, oh, he was immature. He was a bad locker room guy. He's not really different now. The Dodgers are just winning. And he's just still playing good. He's still like doing all that stuff. He's still very demonstrative. He's still very weird. He's just a weird guy. And like, that's fine. That's great. I love it. I love him. And we should just stop calling everyone immature just to sun them or whatever. Just to keep these players in their place. You know, that's like not, it's not what we're here for.
Yeah, it's a bad look.
We're not here to adjudicate the adulthood of grown men that we don't really know anything about.
Nope. Just enjoy it, man. Enjoy the bat flips and the crotch chops and just every aspect of it. Just let yourself be awash in the hubris.
The Bellinger bat flip after he hit his home run was beautiful. Maybe we can call him immature because he's like 14.
I know.
He looks like a child. You want to use the word immature? How about that? He's actually literally not mature yet. He's like 12. He gets younger every game. every time I talk about him. Ugh, just yeah. kidding. I love him so much. He's perfect. Did you want to talk about... So after the Machado play at first, Brewers first baseman Jesus Aguilar and him had like some words for each other. And apparently they like hashed it out a couple innings later. They talked about it. But right immediately after it happened, it was reported that... I saw it on Twitter. I don't know who wrote about it first or whatever. Sorry for not giving the proper credit. But Aguilar apparently called Machado like a homophobic slur in Spanish. There's not really very much to say here other than the fact that these things are very normal in baseball still. And it's like, you know, we call Machado immature for kicking Aguilar's ankle, but like no one's really talking about the other side of it. That just feels like a thing that we talk about very often. And it reared its ugly head again in the playoffs. And we can't get through one series without something like this happening.
Yep, we literally can't. It was Yuli Gurriel last year with racist taunts towards Yu Darvish. I mean, this is the word that Aguilar used is the same one that Yunel Escobar had painted on his eye black a couple years ago, which is a really bizarre move. And just I don't even know how to break that one down. But like, yeah, it's a culture that needs to be stamped out and rightfully called out, right? Because like this was not talked about in the conversation at all, right? No. It was all focused on Machado. And you're right. It's like, why does using gay slurs, why is that not immature, right? Why is that not a sign of a lack of maturity?
That's the most immature thing that you could put. That's like a very like a middle school, like you just default to that. I think the most indicative thing for me with that situation is that's like the first thing that comes out of these players' mouths. That's the first thing that he thinks to call Machado when something bad happens. That's the first thing Yuli Gurriel does when he gets back to the dugout after hitting a home run. The Yunel Escobar thing is just inexplicable. I don't understand that at all, and I don't even want to try to begin to understand that. But like these two other instances that we've referenced, it's a knee-jerk reaction for them. And it's very strange. And it's not strange, actually. That's not even the word for it. It's very representative of the way that these things infiltrate baseball culture and how that's just the first thing. That's the first instinct that you call upon when something good or bad happens to you. It's just to like sort of try to degrade the other person via this homophobic stance that you have or this racist stance that you have. I don't know. Baseball's bad in that way. All sports are bad in that way, honestly.
Yeah, pretty much. Good riddance to the Brewers.
Yeah. Adios. Bye.
Bye, Josh Hader.
Have fun at home. Yeah. Don't come back next year.
Yeah.
Go play a different sport by yourself. Yeah, we got him. All right. Let's take a quick break. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. And the World Series is happening. So now that we've done 50 minutes of stupid tipping pitches stuff, we're going to talk about the stuff that matters. All right, Alex, we're going to play a little game. We're going to try to predict the headlines of your run-of-the-mill tabloid, your New York Daily News, your New York Post. We are going to try to predict those headlines for the World Series because I know I joked at the very top of the show about how we were hashtag pivoting to analytics, but we are not. So we're going to pivot to fake storylines. I guess it's not really much of a pivot from what we usually do. Yeah. Do you have a first predicted headline that you want to share?
Yeah, so I don't know when David Price is starting. Maybe game two, game three. There have been a lot of questions about him these playoffs, about his postseason curse and like whether or not he can do it. And he finally kind of quelled a lot of those fears in his last start against the Astros. But he comes out in game two or game three, gets absolutely lit up by the Dodgers. Easy one right here off the bat. The Price is wrong. Right? Come on.
Yeah.
Like 2 innings, 5 runs, gets the quick hook. It's just not happening for him, man.
Okay. I love that. I think it's great. I love the show The Price is Right. So I'm down. I love it. The price is definitely wrong. Although, if he does well, can you use the price is right? I feel like that's probably trademarked.
Yeah, probably.
So you're predicting. Let's establish a couple ground rules real quick. Do you think that's going to happen? Like, is that?
I don't know.
Predicting the headlines.
The pun worked, man.
Yeah, it's all about the puns. All right, so we're at the will of the puns here. Okay, I'm down for that.
Yeah.
All right, you ready for mine?
Go for it.
So these work in tandem. It's two separate headlines. I refuse to take a stand on predicting what's actually going to happen in the World Series. So okay. I have two headlines that will that could run based on the outcome of the Kershaw-Sale matchup that's lined up right now. So we talked a little bit about it before the pod started, but probably going to be, it's definitely Sale in game one, probably going to be Kershaw in game one. Then they would pitch again, in theory, on short rest in game four, and then again in a possible game seven, maybe out of the bullpen, a la Madison Bumgarner. So the first one, so this is the in the event that Chris Sale pitches really well and wins it for the Red Sox. Fire Sale. Sox ace goes four in relief to seal World Series. You know? Oh, fire Sale, yeah. Like a fireman out of the bullpen. Fire.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. Yeah.
And he's on fire, you know, hashtag fire emoji.
Yeah, because he's doing really well.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's throwing fire too. You know, he throws hard.
Yeah.
Fire Sale. How about that?
I like it. Yeah, I like it. I like it.
And in the event that Kershaw is the one who steals the spotlight, I'm so prepared for your groan for this one.
God.
Kershaw Shank Redemption. You know, because he's got to redeem himself, man.
Yeah, it is. There's a redemption story there.
There's a big redemption story. I guarantee somewhere, someone will write that headline if Kershaw pitches well and wins World Series MVP.
Yeah, you're right.
Kershaw Shank Redemption. Have you seen Shawshank Redemption?
No, I have not.
Damn, dude. Yeah, we were talking about that at the office this past week, and a couple people hadn't seen it. It's a good film. Check it out. We're a movie podcast now. In all seriousness, though, what is your, I don't know, I don't want to make you make a prediction, but what do you think is going to unfold between Sale and Kershaw? So that's going to be like the crux of this series.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Kershaw is going to mow down the Red Sox.
Woo!
And
that's a take.
I think that he's probably going to come out on top. I don't know. Just gut feeling. I feel like after all of the troubles that have dogged him just over the last few years. I mean, he has a 4 ERA in like 130 playoff innings. That's not great. Like, that's bordering on actual sample size right there. So he has
that's
a narrative.
As good as you're going to get for the playoffs.
Yeah, he has a narrative that follows him. This is his chance to break it on the biggest possible stage, prove all the haters wrong. He's going to reach into that faith of his, talk to God, and just pull out five shutdown innings, strike out Mookie Betts twice, make JD Martinez look foolish, and Chris Sale is just gonna lose it. He's gonna have a meltdown in Boston, and that's gonna be it, man. It's gonna be the nail in the coffin.
He's gonna rip his jersey off and start cutting it up on the mound.
Yeah, honestly, we're gonna have a dramatic moment where he rips out the belly button and throws it at the at the batter, a la Roger Clemens.
I love this plan. Yeah. Okay, you're up next. Your final predicted headline.
So the Los Angeles Dodgers are playing the Boston Red Sox.
They are indeed.
Manny Machado is going to continue his antics. He's going to rile up Red Sox fans so much. And he's going to have a game in which he goes like 4-for-4 with a home run and a stolen base and 3 RBI. And he's going to be just the showiest showman of anyone that we've ever seen. And the headline is going to read, obviously, Manny being Manny. Because,
yeah,
you know, Red
the
Sox,
tables on him.
Manny Ramirez, the former Red Sox player, who that was his tagline. Get it? How we're going to like flip the script a little bit?
Yeah, I love a good script flipped.
Yeah, that's all this podcast is flipping scripts and tipping pitches or something.
Telegraphing our takes. For like the first year of this podcast, I had no idea what tipping pitches meant in the context of this show. And then we were talking
Wait,
about
really?
It. Yeah, I was just like, this is a cool baseball phrase. Fuck yeah. And then we were talking about it last week and you were like, yeah, tipping pitches, you know, like
we telegraph what we're going to say. But since it's not a surprise every week, we talk about the same stuff. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good. Yeah, we could market that. Manny being Manny. I love it. You got to do it. I mean, everyone's going to do it. So
yeah,
why not? And there's not a ton of stuff you can do with Manny.
I was thinking of like Manny, maybe like Manny Machismo or something like that, you know?
Okay. I don't hate that.
Yeah. But I don't, that's like maybe too many syllables for your average tabloid reader. So
rough. Also, machismo is just a wild word to put in a headline. It's not great for SEO.
No, it is not.
All right. Are you ready for my final one?
Yeah, give it to me.
It's the most basic one so far, so I apologize that we're ending on it, but it would be the most momentous occasion of all the things that we've said so far, if that makes sense.
Okay.
It's just simply understated MV Puig.
Ooh. That's
our
nice.
Our boy Yasiel taking home the hardware. I want to see, I can't even express to you, Alex, how badly I want to see Yasiel Puig on national television standing next to Joe Buck just licking the MVP trophy. How great would that be?
Oh my God. I didn't have that image in my head, and now I'm not going to be able to get it out. That's the best thing I've ever imagined.
It's all I'm thinking about. MV Puig, the picture is him with the tongue right on the MVP trophy.
Ugh, that is picture perfect.
Well, I'm glad we could end on that. I honestly think, all jokes aside, actually not all jokes aside, I love it. I honestly think he could, you know, bat lick his way to a great series. And like, he's so showy and so flashy that how do you not pick him if he has a good series?
Yeah.
Like, he's going to make it known every single time he gets a hit. He's going to just like do some crazy shit to the Boston fans and they're going to boo him very hard.
Yeah.
So he's going to be, him and Machado are the two guys really who have the opportunity to like be in big moments and like rip the hearts out of Boston fans who like hate them partially because they're on the other team and partially because they're not white. And so I think like that's going to be a running storyline. I also think, you know, a guy like Justin Turner, who's been really, really good since coming back from his injury in the middle of the season and like really good throughout the playoffs. He's been the Dodgers' best hitter, high average, high OBP, high OPA, all these different things. And he's probably been the Dodgers' best position player for like 4 years now. But all that being said, it doesn't really matter who your best player is in the World Series. It matters who has the best series, as evidenced by David Fries and David Eckstein and other Davids throughout the playoff history. And so I'm hoping it's Puig. I'm hoping for the tabloid's sake. I'm hoping for his sake. I'm hoping for Dodgers fans who have soured on him's sake so they can come back. Like, he's a World Series MVP. I don't know how you don't come back around to him.
Yeah.
At this point, like, if he wins you the World Series. So, and I'm hoping for Tipping Pitch's sake, honestly, because he's our number one boy.
Yeah, that would be the best possible outcome. All right. So after all this very, very serious analysis, all these sabermetrics we've just thrown at you, I want to hear, Bobby, I want to hear your prediction right here, live, on air, put you on the spot. Who's going to win it?
Honestly, if I'm sticking to the MV Puig script, I got to go, like, what? Dodgers in six?
Yeah.
I'd love to see a game seven just because baseball is very good and I don't want it to end and I want this to go as long as possible. But from a my job perspective, I'd like the series to be a sweep because I want the MLB show to be done for a little while. I would love to see Dodgers in six. I want LA to win. I live in LA now. I'm not a Dodgers fan, but it would be cool to see a parade. And it would be cool to see Boston lose, honestly.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
That's what I'm rooting for. What I think will actually happen, I don't know. I think that's about as safe a bet as any. Although I've been underestimating the Red Sox all postseason, so they'll probably win.
Yeah, same.
How about you?
Honestly, I feel like, so momentum obviously is not really a thing in baseball. So I'm going to come out here and say Dodgers have the momentum coming into the series. They have, it's them against the world. Dodgers come out guns blazing, win it in five at home.
Yeah, you're going to look dumb for that one.
That's okay. That will not be the first time.
Well, that's all we got. That is Tipping Pitches World Series preview, predicting the headlines, roasting the bad headlines, and defending the heel Manny Machado. Thank you for listening. If you have questions throughout these playoffs, we'll be all over Twitter at @tipping_pitches. Listen to us on Radio Public. Send us emails. All the good stuff that we say every week. Alex, I'm pumped for the World Series.
I am so excited. I haven't been this excited for something in a while, so I'm ready to go, man.
We'll see you next week.
I want to hear, Bobby. I want to hear your prediction right here, live, on air. Put you on the spot. Who's going to win it?
Give me one sec. There's a spider on the bed that I need to kill. ASMR.
Here we are to talk about the worst column of the week.
Welcome to Tipping Pitches, ladies and gentlemen.
Stop, I hate that. I don't like when you do it.